from KQED.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Minutes ago, Governor Gavin Newsom signed into law big changes to the way California pays for wildfire damage caused by utility companies by creating a fund utilities can dip into, a fund that we ratepayers will contribute $10.5 billion to. And for more on this, we're joined by Lisa Pickoff-White. She's a data reporter and senior producer for KQED. Good morning, Lisa Pickoff-White.
Good morning.
We also have Catherine Blunt with us. She covers renewable energy and utilities at the Wall Street Journal. Good morning, Catherine Blunt.
Good morning.
So, Lisa Pickoff-White, I'm going to start with you. How will we pay this $10.5 billion into the fund?
So, Californians have actually been paying a small fee on their bills for over a decade now, since the 2001 energy crisis, partially also caused by PG&E's first bankruptcy. That fee was set to expire, and what lawmakers did was they extended that fee for more years. Over time, that will grow.
And that surcharge was about $2.50
It was about $2.50. It depends on how much you use. And that was a surcharge not just on PG&E customers, but other customers of investor-owned utilities as well.
All right. And so, Catherine Blunt, talk about the structure of this fund that companies can dip into. How would they be able to access this money? Under what conditions?
Sure. Well, there's two potential ways forward at this point. The Southern California Edison and San Diego Gas and Electric have essentially two options, and one would be it's by securitizing this surcharge that we were just discussing. There could be a $10.5 billion liquidity fund that utilities would be able to dip into to cover future claims, and there would be a reimbursement requirement. But if they want to contribute more to that fund, building it up to about $21 billion, this fund would then act as a sort of insurance backstop. If the utility was deemed to have acted safely and its equipment did indeed spark a fire, it would be able to actually use these funds to cover future claims. And there would be some other stipulations if they weren't found to have acted safely. But there's going to be two paths forward, and it's widely understood that the Southern utilities will choose this larger fund, which does quite a bit to offset their potential liability exposure going forward.
So what would the companies have to do, Lisa Pickoff-White, to get this sort of safety certification?
Well, basically, one of the things that the bill also does was create a wildfire safety advisory board. It also, for instance, expands and creates a new division within state regulators, the California Public Utilities Commission. So to access the fund, they'll have to make $5 billion worth of safety upgrades, which is something that they will not be able to profit off of. Also, it creates new standards. For instance, executive bonuses would have to be linked to safety measures. However, I've heard from a lot of critics who say it simply doesn't do enough.
Well, one of the big concerns, Catherine Blunt, if I understand the criticisms from some lawmakers correctly, is about this shifting the burden of proof in terms of whether they acted, a utility acted negligently or in some illegal way during a fire, towards regulatory entities or outside groups, as opposed to the utility having that burden themselves.
That's right. And that's the way that it is now. The utility has to prove that it acted responsibly. And in this case, this legislation makes it so that it is assumed that it did. If it has the safety certification, and then the burden of, as you said, the burden of proof is on others to raise serious doubt is actually what they would have to do, raise serious doubt that they acted safely and or responsibly. And that's interesting. That does sort of erode the strict liability standard that's currently in place. It's known as inverse condemnation. There's been a lot of hand-wringing about that. That's really sort of the basis of the liability exposure as we're discussing it.
And certainly, Lisa Pickoff-White, there were a lot of Bay Area lawmakers who were really concerned about that. Who supported this bill? Who notably did not?
Yes, quite a few Bay Area lawmakers were against this bill. Several local mayors were also against it, though they were largely actually concerned about a provision that was added earlier this week that would change and allow create it so that the California Public Utilities Commission actually would have to approve public power and municipalization, which is something, for instance, San Francisco is very strongly looking at right now.
Yeah, they'd like to create their own using assets from PG&E.
Yes, of course. So that is something that San Francisco has been talking about since the 1920s. However, there seems to be a much larger push right now, I would say. But in terms of local critics, you know, some people complain that it was rushed. Actually, Governor Gavin Newsom, right before he signed the bill, said that he really thought that that was an unfair criticism, you know, that lawmakers have certainly been looking at this. And for instance, lawmakers passed a bill last year, SB 901, that was really supposed to, that was also supposed to deal with some of these credit ratings. And so, you know, but a lot of Bay Area lawmakers said that they were concerned that this could come off as a PG&E bailout, for instance. They're afraid that rates will increase over time as more of these fires occur and that ratepayers will be left on the hook.
Lisa Pigoff-White is data reporter and senior producer for KQED. Catherine Blunt is also with us. She covers renewable energy and utilities for The Wall Street Journal. We're talking about a multi-billion dollar fund that will help the state and utilities cover the cost of future wildfires that Governor Newsom just signed. And proponents of the bill say that it limits rate increases. And critics, as Lisa pointed out, say that it really helps Wall Street and the utility companies and shifts the burden of proving a utility's negligence onto essentially victims. What do you think? What are your reactions to this new way of paying for wildfire damage caused by power company equipment? Call us at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Post any questions or comments about what just happened this morning, moments ago, on Facebook, on Twitter at KQED Forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. Catherine Blunt, how is Governor Newsom selling this? I mentioned quickly that it could limit rate increases. Lisa points out that there's a future concern that it will actually ultimately end up making ratepayers pay a lot more. And so what has been Newsom's argument for getting this through the legislature?
Right. Well, a huge concern was that on Wall Street was that if San Diego Gas and Electric or Southern California Edison could face a similar fate to PG&E if there was a catastrophic wildfire in either of their service territories. And as a result, major credit rating agencies were threatening downgrades and really putting pressure on the legislature to act to limit their liability exposure going forward. And so reacting to that, Newsom has really made an effort to push this bill through, but before legislature was going to take a month-long summer recess, they're just about to depart for that. And the argument is that we need to stabilize the health of the state's utilities. They provide a necessary service, and without that, you know, what that would require essentially is the state to step in and you know, provide these services, which would be extremely complicated. We saw some of that in the wake of the 2001 energy crisis. And so the argument was that in order to stabilize these utilities in light of this new normal, which has been, you know, these rash of wildfires over the last several years, we're going to need to essentially socialize some of these costs by creating this fund that would allow them, these utilities, an alternative to cover some of these claims without raising rates necessarily. And the extension of the surcharge, the argument was, people have been paying this for some time and
right,
can continue to do it. That's been the argument anyway.
Well, let me get George in. George in San Jose, join the conversation.
Thank you. Good morning. To stop global warming, we need to have people use less energy. And so those of us who are trying to conserve energy have been doing so, but I'm sorry, I'm hearing an echo and I can't concentrate on what I'm saying. Could you reconnect me?
We're not hearing an echo on this end of that, but sure, why don't you go ahead and try calling back? But George's point about, it sounds like he's uncomfortable with this fee on ratepayers, Lisa Pickoff-White, who are trying their best to conserve energy and feel like they're doing more than their fair share, it sounds like.
Yes, and actually PG&E has come under criticism. For instance, they have already proposed a large rate increase for this year that would be about $10 a month for the average consumer. And actually right now, if you have concerns about rates, the Public Utilities Commission is actually holding hearings throughout the state, including two next week, one in Stockton and one in Chico, where I listened to one this week in San Francisco, and almost every bit of public comment was people who were concerned about this rate increase, especially considering PG&E's history of where they've spent their money.
Well, David writes, where will this $21 billion come from? Ah, $10.5 billion will come from ratepayers. Yep, time to break up PG&E and replace it with a nonprofit publicly owned utility like Santa Clara's. Otherwise, PG&E will keep profiting at the expense of their customers. But Lisa Pickoff-White, am I right that TURN, the Utility Reform Network, that some fire victims coalitions, that they supported this bill?
Yes. TURN was really interesting because they originally came out against it and then they flipped and earlier this week said that they supported the bill. It's definitely been a roller coaster since it was proposed about a week ago of how people have felt about it. Some wildfire victims say that they really want a fund because they're concerned that, you know, if the utilities go bankrupt, that they will get nothing at the end of the day. Other wildfire victims really do say that this is a bailout for the utilities, and they're concerned that if the utilities can just keep borrowing against this insurance fund, that there won't be that stick that they're looking for to force utilities to really make safety upgrades. But at the end of the day, someone has to pay for these wildfires. I think that is the very difficult and the very complicated thing that Californians are grappling with and that legislators are grappling with this bill and with previous bills that they've passed to try to stabilize utilities in California, which is it going to be victims? Is it going to be shareholders? How are we going to spread out this risk? And I think also what I've heard from victims and other people, though, is that they are looking forward to talking about safety and how we can stop these fires from starting so that we don't have to pay for them.
Safety in terms of how to harden your homes or how to be more thoughtful in terms of development, things like that.
Well, and also utility safety. How are the utilities going to stop these fires from being sparked in the first place?
And Catherine Blunt, Lisa Pickoff-White raises a couple of important points. First, did you want to comment at all on the fact that groups like TURN, like fire victims groups, did feel like at least they were getting a more concrete or reliable sense of when they could be compensated for losses that they incurred, or that ultimately, you know, we do have to think long term about the new reality of wildfires?
I think that's exactly right, at least among certain groups like this. It certainly didn't have unanimous support across all stakeholder groups, but there were some surprises, as we were just discussing, and I think that speaks to the fact that there's acknowledgement that there needs to be some assurance for utilities going forward that they're not going to face incredibly crippling liability exposure, and that, you know, even though this bill wouldn't, for example, with PG&E, which faces, as the company itself has estimated, it could face as much as $30 billion in liability costs, it doesn't explicitly allow them a means to pay past claims, but by having some assurance going forward, you know, perhaps that influences the way they're able to settle past claims. And, you know, just to your point, it provides some assurance going forward for them, for the utilities. And, you know, that could certainly benefit fire victims and others who did show support for this.
Well, let me go to TJ from Santa Clara. Hi, TJ.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. My question sort of backs up a little bit here, I guess, thinking about this. I mean, when the San Bruno gas explosion happened, we learned that PG&E had been taking money for maintenance on gas lines and giving it out as dividends and stock buybacks instead of actually doing the work. Don't we have the same situation here where PG&E has been taking money in rates to pay for maintenance and clearance of their high power lines so the fires aren't caused? And isn't this a bailout of that? I mean, is there really money that's been paid for maintenance that wasn't used for that purpose? What's the situation with that? Well, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
TJ, thanks for that. I don't think you're alone in feeling that way. And then Catherine Blunt, you even wrote a piece about how PG&E knew for years that its lines could spark wildfires and didn't do the necessary maintenance on them. So does PG&E really deserve this effort by the state?
Right. Well, that is the maintenance issue is important, and it's definitely worth a long conversation about why some of these necessary upgrades were delayed over time. We did not find that that money was being diverted for executive compensation. That was an explicit finding of the work that we did. But, you know, Newsom had it was very difficult to thread this needle from a political standpoint. His challenge was creating something that could be understood as benefiting all three of the state's large utilities, specifically, really, San Diego Gas and Electric and Southern California Edison, without conceding too much to PG&E. Now, it's worth noting that PG&E does not have a role in deciding the final form of the fund. We discussed those two potential paths earlier, $10.5
yes.
billion or $21 billion. But they can't decide. They're going to be beholden to what the Southern utilities choose. There are stipulations for PG&E specifically. They have to emerge from bankruptcy about halfway through next year and pay past wildfire claims in order to access the fund. And, you know, if the utilities go with the larger option, which they're understood to do, PG&E would be paying the most into the fund, given the size of its service territory and, as a result, the amount of potential liability exposure it has. So there are some stipulations specifically for PG&E that, you know, it's probably not quite appropriate to term it a bailout for that company.
So Lisa Pickoff, why Catherine Blunt is saying it's likely that San Diego Gas and Electric and Southern California Edison will end up going with the larger, the $21 billion fund. But also talking about these safety issues with PG&E, these questions around maintenance. The last time you were here, we were talking about a wildfire safety plan that PG&E had submitted to the California Public Utilities Commission in terms of the things that it would do ensure greater safety of its transmission lines and other ways that it, you know, delivers energy to millions of people in the state. So how is that related to this?
Yeah. So one of the things that this bill does is it also creates a new division with in-state regulators that are supposed to specifically focus on wildfires. And to get back to the caller's point about kind of who is watching the money, that is supposed to be the California Public Utilities Commission. That is their role within this kind of morass of regulators of electric companies in California. They're supposed to be checking to make sure that the utilities are doing what they're supposed to be doing. They were the ones, for instance, why we know that PG&E diverted those funds in San Bruno. So what this bill also does is it increases actually the amount that the CPUC can fine utilities. And it, like I said, it adds new people and says, hey, we really want you specifically looking at these safety plans. One of the other kind of interesting small things that the bill did also was change how often these wildfire safety plan bills are due actually from annually to every 3 years.
Well, let me go to Rhea in Novato. Hi, Rhea.
Hello, everybody, and thanks for taking my call. I have a question that hasn't been answered or even proffered or offered up on any level. It has to do with insurance coverages. I pay insurance for flood insurance, my home renter's insurance, fire insurance, and everything else, and PG&E doesn't seem to cover liabilities by paying the proper insurance commensurate with how much damage they cause to the environment and our public. Why aren't they paying insurance costs on their own, and why do we have to continue paying through the nose for our services when they burn everything down?
Rhea, thanks. Catherine Blunt, do you want to respond to Rhea's point and how, to some degree, this fund is being called an insurance policy for the utilities?
Sure. So just to be completely frank, that's not something that I'm intimately familiar with, and I don't know if I feel comfortable commenting on some of the specifics, but I certainly can't, of the caller's question, but what I can speak to is why this is being called an insurance policy for the utilities, and it's that with a larger option, the fund sort of acts as an insurance backstop, and to that end, if the utility was determined to have acted irresponsibly and its equipment did spark a fire, it would be required to pay deductible in order to tap that fund. And so that's where this idea of insurance comes from, if that makes sense. I don't know if you want to anyone's want to add to that in order to get to the caller's specific question.
Lisa Pickoff-White?
Yeah, so PG&E and other utilities do have insurance. In fact, I've seen the amount that PG&E was insured for is considered kind of an average amount. Of course, PG&E has what's considered a much more difficult area. You know, the Sierras, we've seen fires can be very difficult in there. It's also a very large part of California. So whether or not, you know, PG&E was paying enough into that insurance fund is something that I'd, you know, love other experts to speak to as well. However, they were insured. They were insured for about $1.4 billion. And what a lot of people are referring to, as Catherine pointed out, is that this is kind of a secondary insurance fund, mm-hmm. which is something that we've seen in other areas, for instance, earthquakes and things like that.
Well, Helena writes, it's demoralizing that Governor Newsom signed AB 1054, which protects corporate utilities far more than safeguarding the citizens of California. Now it's even more urgent that our lawmakers amend 1054's companion bill, AB 111, to ensure that the California Wildfire Safety Advisory Board has people who have the public interest and knowledge to keep Californians safe. We're hearing quite a few criticisms of Newsom for doing this, but ultimately, politically, Lisa Pickoff-White, it represents a big win for Newsom, does it not?
Yes. And I mean, you know, we've talked a lot about critics, but this passed with large majorities through both the Assembly and the Senate in the state. I think that's, you know, why actually there's very few lawmakers who voted through it, if you look at the numbers. I think this was a big win for Newsom. You know, he put out in late June a kind of plan at looking at this. He got support and he got it through the legislature. I mean, it certainly shows that he has a political will in Sacramento.
Catherine Blunt, do you believe that based on California's previous policies, I guess I should say, in terms of wildfire responsibility and the way that we dealt with that, that utilities in California were too overexposed when it came to wildfire risk and the reality of climate change, that there was too much responsibility on them?
Well, you know, if you think about the spread of wildfire risk throughout the state, it's, historically speaking, wildfire risk was mostly concentrated in Southern California. You know, you saw San Diego Gas and Electric deal with some very serious fires, same with Southern California Edison, and then with the drought that began around 2013 in Northern California and really just, you know, decimated so much of the forest north of San Francisco. Wildfire risk just became something that I think arguably overwhelmed PG&E to some degree. They certainly didn't anticipate the degree to which they would face the risk that they did in the, you know, service territory being as large as it is. And so, you know, to your point, with, you know, climate change and this being a new reality for California, the risk exposure that these three utilities faced collectively is really greater than it's ever been. And I do think that necessitates, you know, a reconsideration of the way that the burden may be expected to bear.
Again, Catherine Plunt is a renewable energy and utilities reporter for The Wall Street Journal, and Lisa Pickoff-White is data reporter and senior producer for KQED. And if you want to join the conversation, 866-733-6786 is the number to call, or post your comments on Facebook, Twitter, or on our website. Lisa Pickoff-White.
Yeah, and to that point, I'd also like to say, though, I mean, we have been seeing these kinds of fires, though, and utilities responding to these kinds of fires for over a decade. You know, San Diego Gas and Electric, after the deadly and devastating Witch Fire more than a decade ago, started making changes. They put up video monitoring systems. They started doing de-energization, powering down, which is very controversial somewhat. However, you know, they had a large liability and they seem to have learned from that and have taken safety measures to try to prevent future fires. And now we're seeing PG&E and other utilities follow in their footsteps, in some cases kind of being dragged along by the state. So I think that this is something that we have known and that experts have known about for a long time, but in a way the state is only starting to grapple with now.
And how does PG&E's coverage area, the numbers, compare with those other two utilities?
I mean, PG&E has more than 60% of the state, and they have a very difficult service area, and I think that's definitely worth repeating.
William writes, when are we sending PG&E executives to jail for gross negligence and manslaughter? I think he is not convinced that they need really any help at all. George in San Jose, join us again.
Okay, I'm back. So just to finish up, to give incentive to those of us who want to conserve energy and limit global warming, the rate increases should be amended to only apply to the higher rate tiers, to those who use more than their allotted amount of energy, and not to us that just use the baseline rate tiers. And I certainly will be withholding my vote for any politician who voted for this bill. And Gavin Newsom has received my last vote, I can tell you that.
Well, George, thanks for sharing your thoughts. I'm going to go to Dwayne in Petaluma next. Hi, Dwayne.
Yes, I was concerned that this bill didn't address it basically transfers the burden of to the citizens from the carbon profiteers and does nothing about global warming. They should have been required to collect as much as they could in court from the big gas companies and required to file a lawsuit if they wanted any help from me.
Well, Dwayne, thanks. I mean, in terms of requiring lawsuits, and in Dwayne's point, it feels like that's the protection he'd like to see, as opposed to what this bill is doing in terms of utilities and providing them with this support. Lisa Pickoff-White.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that is important to this context is something pretty wonky called inverse condemnation, which is important because California actually has a law that's pretty different than that of national law, and is something that I think AB 1054 was kind of trying to work around, and that is that utilities are responsible for the fires that they cause, whether they are negligent or not. And I think that's something that people are really wrangling with, is if the utility wasn't negligent, then who should be paying?
Well, let me go next to Elaine in San Francisco. Hi, Elaine.
Hi. So I have friends who are up in Paradise whose homes were destroyed. And apparently there's a feeling among some in the community that if they don't join a lawsuit, they will somehow just be paid. And I'm wondering, I think they're probably wrong, and I'm wondering if anybody on the panel has any information as to whether there's some magical fund that will just automatically be distributed to victims of that fire.
Well, Catherine Blunt, I mean, unlikely, but I guess what I'm wondering is, again, the defense by some groups of supporting this bill was that it gave a more firm sense of when victims could be compensated. Can you just explain that provision a little bit more?
Well, I think my understanding of that argument, and you know, I welcome a different perspective if that's not the case, but I think it's simply to say that by providing some insurance that utilities would have, assurance that utilities would have a larger number of options for how to cover future claims, you know, we may see, it may influence the way that, specifically if we're talking about PG&E, you know, its ability and the speed with which it's able to settle past claims. Obviously, I mentioned before that that's stipulation for its ability to access this fund going forward. And so to that extent, that's, I believe, the way that this bill influences that dynamic.
And it's important to note that this bill will not apply, this fund will not apply to past victims of fires caused by PG&E equipment. So this is not a fund that, for instance, survivors of the Camp Fire would be able to access.
Correct.
And let me see if I can squeeze in one last call from Christy in Mill Valley. Hi, Christy.
Hi. I just have a quick comment, and I have not heard your whole program, but my concern is that so many of us in the fire-prone areas where PG&E's equipment has caused the fires are losing our fire insurance and only can get insurance through Cal Fair, and that's not enough replacement cost for any of our homes. I don't know if they can address that or not.
Christy, I can ask Lisa Pickoff-White quickly if she can.
Yes. Yeah, so fire insurance in California has been harder to get since the Californias. However, this bill does not apply or really have to do with homeowners insurance.
Well, Lisa Pickoff-White, data reporter and senior producer for KQED, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Catherine Blunt of The Wall Street Journal, thanks for joining us as well.
Thanks very much.
She covers renewable energy and utilities. And thanks to our listeners for their questions, comments, reactions to this new law that takes effect immediately. Correct, Lisa Pickoff-White? I'm Mina Kim. You've been listening to Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.